All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's Monday, November 28th, 2022. Nice to have you along. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving weekend. Hope it was plentiful and joyful, relaxing, and you're ready to head into a week that's going to see the calendar turn to December. I can't even get the word out. It's going to be December later this week. And wrapping up the end of 2019 part three. It's kind of how this feels, or 2020 part three. It's like we're living in an era that just won't stop, but we'll hope for better things in 2023 for all of us. If you'd like to reach the show, 715-388-7155. We can chat with you about whatever's on your mind. We're going to do that with Mark in just a second. Email radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Aaron Somers is here in the producer chair. It is allegedly Cyber Monday. And Aaron, I have to make a confession. I made an internet purchase last night and I screwed it up. And I need to confess it so that other people don't make my basic rookie mistake. Have you shopped online already for the holidays?
I've done some, yeah. I'm going to do a little more today.
Yeah, the only other thing I purchased was from a store. I didn't buy it at the store, but kind of kicked the tires on it, if you will, and then made a decision on which thing was just right for a Christmas gift, and then I bought it from their website. But that's about the extent of it. So last night was not for a gift. It was for myself. It's getting near the end of the year. People are using up their, you know, flex spending accounts or what have you, and I had a little bit left in ours to get my contact lenses for the upcoming year. And my wife was really happy with a particular company that she got her glasses from and highly recommended them. I put that company into Google. I hit enter, and I normally read more carefully, but I did not. And I simply clicked on the first thing that came up. And then I bought the contact lenses and I saw a different name, but I thought maybe that was the name of the parent company or something like that. Oh no. That was a Google ad that I'd clicked on. And I know this. I'm no dummy. I know that when you do the Google search, that sometimes the first couple of returns are an ad, but quite often they are an ad for the company that you're looking up.
Yeah, almost
always.
And
I completely took it hook, line, and sinker, clicking on just the first one, assuming it was that company without reading carefully. And I think I got the same or an even better price for the contact lenses, but I was just so mad at myself for falling for something fairly basic and thought I'd better mention it in case other folks, well, A, want to laugh at me, or B, you know, don't want to repeat that. So Aaron, you know this, Google is not always your friend.
Yeah, definitely. My roommates and I were having a discussion about Google, just thinking, I wonder how much server space they have. It's just an incomprehensible number. I mean, that obviously has nothing to do with them being good or bad, but it's just a mystery that we will never find the answer to.
No, we will not. And those are the wonders of capitalism, or at least this particular brand of it. And as we said earlier, you know, just because we propose doing something else that doesn't make it socialism, there's too many people that don't even understand what it is. Mark and Prairie du Sac wanted to talk about that and, you know, people's understandings of the mixed economy that we occupy here. Mark, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, and thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just spent the first few days of deer season up north in Douglas County. That's where I grew up. But it just amazes me the historical ignorance of a lot of our politicians. And because of the lack of civics education in our schools these days, people don't know the definitions of any of these things anyway. I mean, how these people manage to get degrees, if they ever did get a degree, is just beyond me. How they manage to get beyond high school just amazes me. Yes, it's ironic. I was just reading an article on, not necessarily the Pilgrims, but they were also a capitalistic venture backed by money, you know, coming from England to, and they're supposed to turn a profit and on the venture of colonizing the quote-unquote New World.
Mm-hmm.
And they were completely unprepared for it. I mean, and they had to rely on each other to actually survive. They had to rely on, they had to rely on theft of Indian stores that they actually raided and confiscated. The leader supposedly, you know, made good on, but it just, we are, like you mentioned before, we are a social animal. I mean, the only way we live is in societies, and we're relying on each other. And it's not about, you know, when you try this, you know, get it all for myself, that's when you are going to fail. I mean, that it is just, it's remarkable that, I don't know how people manage, these guys manage to get where they get. I mean, that the caliber of politicians that we have is just shockingly low in some cases.
It is, but it's not totally surprising in the sense that I keep in mind that we really are living in another gilded age where wealth is getting increasingly concentrated at the top, and that enables them to, you know, buy off, you know, certain politicians, you know, in ways that aren't as direct as they were back in the olden days, but certainly there, when you look at what super PACs have done to our politics, it's no wonder that our system of capitalism in America, much like our system of democracy, both have been tainted heavily by the way that we're handling the economy, by the way we look at the economy and taxation. And it's not to the benefit of the majority of Americans. We'll have more coming up after the break. This is Up North News Radio. I know I said that we were mostly doing Motown today for Berry Gordy's birthday, but I couldn't resist a little Springtime for Hitler, simply because we're going to use this segment talking about my free political advice for former President Donald Trump and, you know, pretty much anybody else for that matter. Now, listen carefully, Donald. Don't dine with Nazis. There you go. Okay, you can send your check directly to me. I'd appreciate that, and maybe try to follow that advice next time around. I don't know that you can say enough. I don't know that you can say a lot about the, you know, Trump dining at Mar-a-Lago with a white supremacist and an anti-Semite in Kanye West. But I also don't think you should just mock it and sweep it under the rug. I think you should spend a little time on it, especially in light of what Mark from Prairie du Sac said in our last segment. He said, that people aren't getting the proper education on the economy. And I think where I would maybe disagree with that a bit, and, you know, not intentionally, but it's whether they get the education or not is one thing. But then after your education is done, you are bombarded by messages in media, from politics, from news, from your neighbors who saw something on the internet, so it must be true. And so it's not terribly surprising these days that maybe people who did learn the right definition of capitalism now think that anything that they disagree with is socialism, because these same people are trying to spread the same false messages about everything from gender identity, LGBTQ individuals, to racial issues, to religious issues. We are in an age where, like it or not, misinformation is running rampant. And I'm not going to say it's the period of the most misinformation, but it is definitely the era where misinformation is spreading fastest and where its growth is exponential, thanks to the internet and thanks to the fragmentation of media, where instead of three different newscasts, each from credible newsrooms with editorial gatekeepers, it's now a Wild West, say anything you want landscape out there in the media. It is why, it's part of why we're here, is to try to help people cut through the smog of misinformation and to frankly embrace, you know, the angels of their better nature in moving forward and not letting the voices of ugliness hold sway. In terms of voices of ugliness, this Holocaust denier and white supremacist Nick Fuentes, who was brought to dinner at Mar-a-Lago by Kanye West for this dinner last week. Fuentes is 24 years old, I guess. 24. I was a baby at 24. I mean, I was working in my second radio job at that point. We just had our first child. We were still years away from home ownership. The last thing I would think that I would be prepared for at the age of 24 is to be an already known national spokesperson for hatred. This is somebody who was at Charlottesville when violence erupted. This is somebody who was at the January 6th rally when violence erupted. And this is someone who, despite his claims otherwise, was not a surprise to Donald Trump. I don't know if you know this, but Donald Trump does not dine with somebody he does not know about. You don't surprise him. You don't surprise somebody with a Secret Service detail where everything is vetted well in advance. And even the things that come up on short notice, again, are not full-out surprises. Trump knew what he was doing. Trump knows Kanye West, knows what he stands for, tries to use him the way that other people think that they can use Trump as a way to kind of, you know, grease the rails for their own ambitions. But instead, they've got a tiger by the tail and they always end up getting mauled. And that's what we have here is three people. I mean, What's the movie Dinner for Schmucks or something like that? I mean, there's got to be a name for this dinner because, A, it's so noteworthy that three such loathsome people gathered together. B, that Trump tried to deny it at first, claim it was all a surprise, and then say, well, I hardly know one of these people. And now to watch the utter lack of widespread Republican condemnation of this is all going to be noteworthy. So I think this dinner does deserve a name because unlike a lot of things that come and go in the news cycle, this one's going to stick around as a milestone moment. I would even contend as a milestone moment in the ongoing fade of Donald Trump from the national scene. I am surprised that even a few Republicans have spoken out against it. But it could be that a lot of those Republicans are just hoping once again that you know, more and more voters see that Trump is an extremist, he's racist, he's all of the other things, and does not even have the judgment to not have these two people over and then not put them on blast simply because you don't want to alienate part of your base. Well, what does that say about your base? And is that really the base the Republican Party wants to embrace? I don't mean the base that is leery of, you know, diversity training and race relations. I'm talking about the base on the extreme that is outwardly hostile toward blacks, toward Jewish people, toward immigrants of any stripe. Somewhere between those two areas of the furthest extreme and those who simply have demonstrably wrong views on this kind of thing, somewhere in between there sits Glenn Grothman, a member of Congress, somebody I served with in the Wisconsin State Senate, somebody who represents his area, you know, in and around West Bend, a place where I have worked, where I've talked to the folks there. The first piece of advice I was given from somebody in that area before starting a talk show was, you know, you have to realize this area was like the capital of white flight back in the day. And it certainly shows when you do, you know, a talk show in places like that. And Glenn Grothman is from that area where if you're accusing him of anything involving racism, that means you're the racist in his mind. To that end, he appeared on WKOW over the weekend, Capital City Sunday. And let's give a listen as AJ Bitepour tries to get him to explain what he means by certain remarks and his feelings on race relations.
During the campaign for this year's midterms, you were on the campaign trail with Senator Ron Johnson, and you called President Biden, quote, divisive. So I want to play a clip. This was from one of the stops this fall.
I have never seen a divisive president as Joe Biden. In his inaugural speech, he talked about racism four times and white supremacy once. Can you believe that? I mean, you'd think you're living in, it's always Selma, Alabama in 1955. I'll tell you with that guy.
So first, Congressman, with the Education Committee that you serve on, what do you believe, if the president is talking too much about racism and other Democrats too, what is the appropriate way to discuss the history of racial discrimination and present day racial disparities?
Well, I happen to attend a swearing-in ceremony for immigrants in West Dallas earlier this week. Of the approximately 110,000 people being sworn in, I'd be surprised if there were more than five or six of European ancestry. People come around here from all around the world and thrive. As a matter of fact, if you look, people come here from Asian background, India, China, Japan, and even do better financially than the native born. So the idea that we have a huge racial problem is quite frankly just preposterous. And when you talk about the racial problem, you actually may cause some young people to give up, to feel that how can I succeed because I'm from such and such a background.
Yeah, so along those lines, you know, because we just did a segment a couple of weeks ago about how the state has the biggest disparity in the whole country between black and white students' test scores. The black home ownership rate in the state is among the nation's worst. So how do you address those things, you know, while maintaining that and teaching about this country in a way that doesn't necessarily make anyone, you know, feel bad about where they're from or the country's overall history?
Well, I think we have a lot of African Americans moving into our country fairly recently. At least the statistics I see show a lot of, quite frankly, single parenthood. And that's unrelated to racial problems. I think, you know, it'd be better if we got back to where we were in this country at a time when single parenthood was relatively rare and we always had a mom and dad at home. For whatever reason, we're afraid to bring up that topic.
Well, there he is, my old colleague, Glenn Grothman, talking to AJ Bitepour over the weekend. And as always, when Glenn speaks on racial matters, you should first take a deep breath because you have to figure out where you even begin with everything that Glenn believes in and talks about. And so to tackle a few of them here, to say you went to an immigration ceremony, a naturalization ceremony, and there were only five or six people there of European descent. And so therefore, the fact that we have, you know, a racial problem in America is preposterous. First off is, I mean, that's apples and oranges if ever there were. Of course, people still want to come to America. It is an immense land of opportunity. It also has a race problem. And there, no amount of sweeping is going to get that problem under the rug. It's one that must be dealt with. And to say that talking about it is what makes it worse, talking about it is divisive, is again to simply say, I'm okay with the racism and the institutional racism that we have in America, and please don't talk about it because you're the one who's the divider. For him to say about Biden, everything is Selma 1965 with this guy. I mean, and that's not even the most offensive thing that he said. You know, he went into again his rant about single parenthood, that single moms in and of themselves are essentially bad people who need a family is so clearly clueless in terms of, you know, what the state of marriage, relationships, workplace, and everything else. But of course, he sums it up by saying we need to go back to a time when ... You know, like a time when, yeah, people stayed married in abusive relationships because they couldn't get out of it, and so much more. But that's Glenn Grothman, a congressman from Wisconsin. We'll be back with more in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Tell you something, if you want a challenge is that, you know, it's Berry Gordy's birthday, you want to pay tribute to Motown Records, but you can only put up a handful of songs. And I've got the book that came with the box set, Hitsville USA, and I mean, honestly, we didn't do the Marvelettes or Mary Wells. We didn't have the Jackson 5 on there at all. Rare Earth. There's just so much you can play here. And if it gets you to maybe do a little streaming later on after listening to some of the fine shows on this program, we hope a little Motown will lift your day. Over on the Up North News website right now, among the stories there, best moments in Wisconsin sports 2022, best moments in Wisconsin business in 2022, and seven ways Wisconsin businesses excelled in 2022. Christina Lurie starting to put up some of our look back before we look ahead at 2023. First, we look back at the year that was more than elections, but other developments around Wisconsin. And again, you can find that at upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget that WI. I am trying to make a transition in social media. And I know that not everybody is on Twitter, and not everybody is caught up with how broken it is now that Elon Musk has purchased it and is allowing, you know, Nazis and anti-Semites and white nationalists back on to spew hatred. It still plays a role, and there are still people like me who will stay there if for no other reason than to try to, you know, make a stance against misinformation. But because it's not as useful and not as civil as it could be, there are people who are making moves to alternative sites. The two most known at this point are called Post and Mastodon. And they're both rather different. They have differences, but they also have similarities in that they want to become that next streaming feed of information that people like me want. You know, Twitter, for me, at its best, I've always associated with the old teletype news tickers in newsrooms, whether it was AP or United Press International. And then from those news sources, you'd also add some smart voices and some funny voices, and then some more Wisconsin voices. And if you curate it just right, you have this nice stream of information. And that's what we had for a time with Twitter, along with, you know, some of the bots and some of the trolls and things like that. But it could be utilitarian. Not so much lately. And again, I don't care to support, you know, what Musk is doing in letting so much toxic material, you know, spew onto the site. And so I've been trying to build up profiles on both Mastodon and Post. And I was following, oh, about 500 accounts on Twitter. So far, I'm up to about 50 on both Mastodon and Post. It's a slow process. And I resent Elon Musk for making me do this, for making me build up new follower lists. But I decided to have a more positive point of view on this. I'm taking the Marie Kondo approach to it. As I'm looking at each group that I'm or person that I'm following on Twitter and determining whether to follow them on Mastodon and Post, it's not just do they have an account there, but I'm looking at it and going, does this bring me joy? It turns out there's a few accounts I've been following that really, they don't bring me joy, and they don't bring me a lot of new information. They repost a lot of others' material, but they don't have any good personal takes themselves.
You know, that's a really good way to make lemonade from these lemons. They're particularly sour lemons, pretty rotten, but you know, that lemonade seems to at least be all right, serviceable.
I figured, and I don't know what made it occur to me, but I guess I decided I'm going to keep plowing ahead, even though, again, it's using up time I'd rather be using for something else. Although, let's be honest, the time I'd be doing would be doom scrolling on Twitter. So it's social media time anyway. So I may as well try to build it, because I don't know if both Mastodon and Post are going to be, you know, the future, or if only one will survive, or if something else will come out. And as I remind people, I mean, yeah, we've had Twitter and Facebook and Instagram for a long time, but we had other things before that, you know, whether it was MySpace or, you know, CompuServe or all of these other things. So there's nothing that says Facebook and Twitter and Instagram were going to be the only big three forever. I mean, heck, ABC, CBS, and NBC thought they were going to be the big three forever until they weren't. You know, they're still there, but now there's all kinds of other platforms. Same can be said with social media. So we're going to, you know, populate those, and I'll kind of let you know how that goes. I feel like, I don't want to say a colonizer, because the term no longer has very useful connotations, but I do feel like I'm trying to settle in some kind of a new world and decide whether the environment in this place or that place is hospitable to my information gathering needs. And so I'll let you know. As I was doing said doom scrolling over the weekend, again, we do find positive nuggets. And I really wanted to call attention to a positive nugget out of Georgia. Although again, it's based in a very negative nugget. But the positive nugget is the long, long lines of voters in Georgia on Saturday who are early voting for, it's next week already, next week's Senate runoff between the incumbent Democrat, Raphael Warnock, and Republican Herschel Walker. And it was just an amazing sea of people, tens of thousands of people waiting in line to vote on Saturday to make their voices heard. That's the positive view of it. I'm sure you already see where I'm going with the negative view of it. That we have to have lines in the United States of America where you wait 3 and 4 hours in line to vote, that's not a bug. That's a feature of the system as it was set up by Georgia Republicans, who have put such immense restrictions on local units of government and on election rules as a way to suppress the vote. Call it what it is. This is voter suppression. It's the same thing that Wisconsin Republicans have tried by eliminating drop boxes and by proposing severe restrictions on polling places, which would disproportionately hurt cities more than rural parts of the state and of the country. I'll say it again. This is the only developed country in the world with a political class that is devoted to making it harder to vote. No matter where else you go, no matter what other political class you talk to, they want to make it easier to vote. That to them is a selling point, because they believe they can win on their ideas and on their candidates. Republicans right now cannot do that, and they are devoted to making up stories about election security and then trying to take advantage of that by suppressing votes, by gerrymandering districts, and by allowing an unlimited flow of corporate money into politics. The only way that's going to be overcome, given how rigged things are right now, is for those folks in Georgia to stand in line for hours and hours. And the same thing would have to be done here as well. Despite the rigged maps, despite the elimination of drop boxes, we had a healthy turnout recently, though not as healthy as it could have been. There's still room for improvement. And that will have to improve again come April, when Wisconsin has a significant state Supreme Court election. Though, as I found out, when talking to extended family over the weekend. Again, we live in a bubble here, you and I. Yeah, you're listening to this program or you're watching our video feed on Facebook or, you know, at Up North News. And we know about the Supreme Court election. We know how important it is. There's a whole lot of people outside of our information bubble that do not know or maybe heard something basic about it. And so they're going to be very surprised when they start seeing all kinds of advertising in the first part of the year. But that's where it's incumbent upon us, you and I, the folks plugged in to information, the folks who are aware of misinformation, to be downright evangelical about getting our friends and neighbors to vote, answering their questions, and helping them see the importance of showing up and casting a ballot as if their livelihoods and democracy depend on it, because it does. Here in Wisconsin, we've had Republicans who have for over a decade now declared war on public education. Dr. Jill Underle was also interviewed by A.J. Byatt-Poor on Capital City Sunday over the weekend and was asked a bit about the notion, let's just call it the right-wing boogeyman, you know, whether it's CRT or diversity or anything along the lines of social issues. Anything along the lines of teaching our kids how to be good and decent people and well-educated about the history of this country. Does doing that hurt the basics of reading and writing? That's their current talking point as they attack public education. And Dr. Underle was asked about that.
What would you say to any conservative lawmakers? Because we've heard in Wisconsin and in other states concern that some of these schools are promoting concepts like equity at the expense of focusing more on just basic fundamentals like reading and math.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I would say is that students need to feel safe where they're learning and where they live. And when we talk about things like equity and we talk about social skills and those things, those are the kind of the components that make the environment perfect conditions for learning. When kids feel safe and when they can advocate for themselves, when they're getting the things that they need, when they're getting food, for example, breakfast and lunch, when they feel safe among their classmates and in their school building, those are the kinds of environments that we want all kids to thrive in. And when those conditions are there, that's when learning is able to happen.
And she's mentioned that to us before in interviews as well, that to teach the basics, to teach skills, you need a good teaching environment. And you can't have that, you know, when kids are hungry or when kids are ill-prepared for school, when parents don't take part. And I saw an educator post over the weekend about that, about it was parent-teacher conference time. And I think they put up like 7% of their students' parents, you know, came in. So don't tell them that parents feel like they don't have input in their kids' education. They do. But again, they can't have the basics if you have a legislature that insists on starving school districts of the resources they need in order to provide these basic services. And one of my favorite people on planet Earth, Katie Rosenberg, mayor of Wausau, said this so well in a post yesterday, saying, State Superintendent Jill Underle is talking about funding for local schools on the Sunday Yap Yap shows, and I feel heard. Shared revenue is broken in its current form. First off, bonus points for Sunday Yap Yap shows. But second, she points out again that it's not just school districts. It's local units of government, county, cities, towns, statewide, that have pretty much had their fill of what maybe a decade ago made sense in their minds, that maybe there was waste in the budget and there need to be things that are cut back. But they're finding out, as I tried telling them when I was in the legislature, you talk about cutting waste, you're the waste they want to cut. Oh, no. My thing is essential. No, it's not. Not in their minds. That's certainly the case with public education, when they're now funding a parallel track for schools, private and religious and, you know, conceivably for-profit institutions. And certainly the same with essential services. They'll let you hike taxes to a degree, property taxes, but don't expect them to change it anytime soon. If you want change, you're going to have to stand in line to vote. I hope it's not 4 hours, but whatever it takes, you're the one who can bring about this change. You alone, along with a few of your friends. We'll talk to Chad Holmes a bit about the weekend in sports after this on Up North News Radio. Many of you are 10 minutes away from hearing Todd Alba on your radio, and then some of you from 2 to 4 hear Mr. Chad Holmes coming up. I messed up your start time earlier, Chad. I'm correcting the record over here. But Chad joins us now because I saw a great post from him about, you know, the changes going on with Badger football. Chad, how are you?
Doing good, Pat. Good morning.
Yeah, good to have you here. Thanks for coming on a little bit earlier, and I didn't want to steal your thunder or anything like that. I'm sure you'll talk about this on your show this afternoon as well. Mm-hmm. But you know, you had a couple of thoughts on the Wisconsin Badgers not picking up on, you know, Jim Lenhart, you know, who is a West Central Wisconsin, you know, kid. Still want to call him a kid because we remember the days when he was, you know, a walk-on and how well things have done, but you know, we're in a day and age where you don't just put somebody in because A, they're local, and B, it feels good. And you kind of really succinctly explained why you thought that is.
Yeah. He is a beloved guy, obviously. And I think we saw that yesterday. I mean, after he did not get the job, a lot of folks are very upset. But it was actually interesting because the Badgers' new coach, Luke Fickell, had a very similar background in terms of what Jim Lenhart has experienced, because a little less than a decade ago, Fickell became the interim coach at Ohio State, and he had a year to prove himself. They were, I think, willing to make him the permanent coach, but it was almost exactly the kind of year the Badgers had. They were about a 500 team, and ultimately Ohio State went with Urban Meyer, and Fickell did not get the permanent job. And he stayed with Meyer for a year and then went off and did his own thing at Cincinnati very, very successfully, including, you know, making it to the national semifinals a year ago. And I basically said that at this level right now for what Wisconsin wants to do and the way the college football landscape is, to take a person that has not built a program on his own to a certain level to get a Badger job, to get an Ohio State job, to get one of the major jobs in America, you don't see. And I think Jim Lenhart kind of needs to do what Luke Fickell did after he was passed over for Ohio State, go get his own job in terms of a program, prove that he can build a program, and then who knows? I mean, that he can get a Wisconsin-level job or a Big Ten job and never know in the future. And also, and I didn't put down this in my thread, maybe if Jim Lenhart had gone somewhere 2 years ago and established himself as a top-level head coach, what took a program that was a Midland program and turned it into a contender, he probably gets the job at Wisconsin. Staying at Wisconsin may have ultimately cost him the opportunity to become the head coach next year.
So what you're saying is that for folks that might hear that and think, well, wait, what about promoting from within and somebody, you know, goes up the company ladder, as it were, as opposed to, you know, a kind of more of a lateral move? You're saying that's kind of the way you have to go, because there is no working your way up to the top job. It's better that you have the top job someplace else and work your way up to bigger and bigger schools from the head coaching position.
That's what I was saying, and I don't think that's a 100% thing. Ryan Day, who is now the coach at Ohio State, came up from the staff and has been successful. Not successful Saturday against Michigan, but successful for the most part. So, I mean, it does happen. But I think Chris McIntosh, the Wisconsin AD, wanted somebody that has proven that he can build a program. And what Fickell did at Cincinnati is incredibly impressive. Ironically, you talk about sliding doors moments. The reason that Fickell got the job at Cincinnati is because a guy named Tommy Tuberville failed miserably at Cincinnati. If Tommy Tuberville doesn't succeed, if Tommy Tuberville succeeds at Cincinnati, Luke Fickell doesn't become the head coach at UC and then become the head coach at Wisconsin, and America is probably denied Tommy Tuberville becoming one of the
dumber U.S. senators
in the United States is from the state of Alabama. So it's one of those things that a couple of different outcomes occurred because strictly Tommy Tuberville was a terrible head coach at Cincinnati.
You just never know how the chips are going to fall. And you, of course, are speaking my language. Anytime that somebody takes a look at media conventional wisdom and pokes at it. And I'm really glad you did, because again, while you take aim at, as you put it, every Badger beat writer, we're not saying that I can't, you know, that they can't do their job, that they're bad people or whatever. But in this case, again, much like politics, conventional wisdom is really not the same as reporting the news. And the conventional wisdom from these folks didn't work out.
Yeah, it was really interesting. As you said in the last segment, you know, you follow, you know, Twitter as a news source, and I would see all the Badger beat writers put their links about how they had a story. Jim Leonard deserves to have the interim tag taken off. He has earned the job. They could have all put it under one byline because it was all the same, opinion. And it felt like, even going back to October when this all occurred, that a few of those writers were almost fanboys. And you're exactly right in terms of politics. I mean, you see, you know, I think some of the access journalism, you become close to the people that you cover, and then all of a sudden you're shading it in a different way as opposed to reporting it. And it was really amazing. And I thought all these folks said that Jim Leonard deserved the job, but ultimately the one person that decided who's going to get it said no. And it was just very interesting. And also, none of those Badger beat reporters were on this yesterday. This came from national reporters and Cincinnati reporters, and and the Badger beat reporters were beat on this story completely. Again, it was just, I thought, a very interesting aspect, because up until 2 days ago, they were still saying probably today Jim Leonard is going to be announced as the Badger head coach.
Now, I'm sure there's some head scratching going on in some newsrooms out there around Wisconsin today. Just real quickly, we won't dwell on the Packers. We'll rub salt into that wound later on. But I knew from back when I was appearing on, you know, the previous incarnation of Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, I would appear there as a guest from time to time and show up and see. I mean, almost nobody is covering high school football like you. And so what were your impressions on the football playoffs and the season as well? Because, I mean, you're definitely a voice of experience there. Was it a good year?
For us, it was a good year. It's always fun to get a chance to do a state championship. And here in Wausau, Newman Catholic won a state championship for the second year in a row in eight-player football. Wausau West won a share of the conference championship in the Valley here in central Wisconsin. I will say quickly, though, for 11 man, it used to be where there were so many powerhouses in this area. Right now, Central Wisconsin is trying to catch up, especially to the Fox Valley. Boy, they're playing some football over there, and they are spending money for some incredible facilities over there as well. So, but generally, it was a terrific high school football season, and now transitioning onto the ice for the hockey and onto the hardwood for the basketball.
Exactly. And nobody's going to cover it like Chad Holmes does, who you also hear afternoons at Bull Falls Radio. Thank you so much for the chat. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Pat.
All right. Have a great week. And that'll do it for us as well. Go have fun. Go work hard. Play hard. Enjoy your Monday. And we'll see you back here come Tuesday. Yeah.